All right. Hello and welcome, everybody. It is that time again. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast, episode 294 on this Tuesday, September 1st, 2026. Josh Calloway, Tom Green, Brody Lusk, three-man pod, 3 days out from kickoff, and our very first live pod. First time we've ever done it live. Hopefully people, we're going to plan to do this more over the course of the season, and we're going to do a lot of post-game shows live. We'll talk about that more later on and probably in the game preview show on Thursday, but we're excited. The season is just about here. Today, we're going to do our final season predictions. We're going to lock in how much better we think this offense will be. How could the defense be even better than a year ago? Will Oakland return to the playoff? We're going to get into all that. We're going to lock in our final predictions for this season. We'll also get into the depth chart a little bit on the front end as well. So it's a nice Tuesday show, our final regular podcast episode before the season opener on Friday. It's a beautiful, beautiful time. Reminder, subscribe, Sooners Illustrated, Oklahoma.247sports.com. Promo code's right underneath Brody over there in the corner, Sooners60. Use that promo code, get 60% off a VIP membership, Sooners Illustrated, the entire 24/7 Sports Network. Take advantage, be with us every single day over at Sooners Illustrated. All right, fellas. Let's get into it. First live pod. And a big part of why we're doing it live, something we're going to do more this season, we want to hear from you. So if you're watching live, and obviously if it's on YouTube after the fact, or if you're listening on podcast normally, nothing's changing. It's the same as it's always been. It's just there's another option to be with us in real time, jump in the live chat, and give us some feedback. We want to hear from people in real time. We can kind of go back and forth a little bit. So hopefully over the course of the season, that becomes more of a regular thing. And so feel free to do that, and we'll get your comments featured throughout the show as I see fit, I guess, as we go along. All right, guys, let's get into it. We're going to do our season predictions, all that stuff, but I want to first start with the depth chart. We got it yesterday. I'm going to put it up here so people can kind of look at it for reference. If you haven't seen it, this is what we're working with. You know, not to, like, try to pat ourselves on the back too much here or anything, but if you've been keeping up with us on the show here, or certainly the reporting over Sooners Illustrated, this is – pretty much across the board kind of what we expected, right? Not a lot of surprises on here, certainly in my mind. Anything that stood out to you guys? I just want to kind of open board it with the depth chart. Obviously, the big news was Ryan Foje getting that center nod. I'm sure everyone's kind of seen by now, or at least somewhat aware, that there is Foje a little bit banged up this week. Probably, you know, decent chance that he's not available for the opener on Friday. If that's the case, it would be Caleb Nita getting the start. But the important news here, guys, is that, you know, moving forward, all things being equal, sans Jake Mikla, Foje, the guy at center. Just, I guess, thoughts on that whole conundrum with that musical chair as the offensive line, but then also anything else depth chart-wise that stood out to you guys?
Yeah, I mean, with the offensive line, I mean, this is why you have someone like Ryan Foje who you can kind of plug in different spots. That versatility is key. And, you know, they rep multiple guys at that center spot. And, you know, we've discussed before, but I feel like they have eight guys that they feel like they can really roll with right now along that offensive line. Obviously, now you might be down two of them, so you're a little shorthanded there. But it's UTEP. I think it's smart to, you know, err on the side of caution in this case with Foje and his little minor injury issue there. But, I mean, otherwise, you know, you feel pretty good about what you have across that offensive line. Even if, you know, Caleb Nita ends up starting, you know, he's a guy who's started 10 games the last two seasons, nine of them last year at Western Kentucky, has started a game against an SEC team last year in LSU and put some really good stuff on tape. So he's capable of filling in right there. And this is why you went out and got him in the transfer portal, to kind of have a, you know, break glass in case of emergency type of option there at center.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Caleb Nita will be your starting center against UTEP. We have a full update over on the board. If you haven't gone, go ahead and read that. Just about the whole injury situation. Minor injury, but likely going to see Nita rolling out there with the ones against UTEP, and opportunity for him. I think more so I'm interested to see what happens at right guard. Because that is a or with Tito Zaida and Noah Best. And I think Noah Best will likely be the one to go out there first. But it seems like both those guys are going to get some action on Friday night. And you probably go with whichever one you feel most confident in going into Michigan. So I'm interested to see who that will be. And then also, you know, do they try and tinker with maybe putting Noah Best at center for a little bit on Friday night with Tito Zaida at guard? That's going to be something I'm watching for. So it'll be interesting. I think the injury situation with Foje, you know, it is a minor injury. They'll be good against UTEP, but I was kind of looking forward just to seeing what he can do at center, just because we've seen him start games at tackle and guard and now center. So, yeah, be interesting to see what happens, I think, particularly at right guard.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it certainly stinks, obviously, right? The fact that, you know, we talked about it the last couple of weeks, like Ryan stepping up and stepping into that center role, not a position he's played a lot. And you kind of hate, assuming that Jake Mikla is not back and ready to go by Michigan, right? And he's trending positively from everything that I've heard. Like, things are moving well there, back sooner rather than later. But assuming that Jake Mikla is not back, you're now basically more than likely asking Ryan Foje to make his first career start at center in the Big House, right? Which is not ideal, right? I mean, they're going to be fine on Friday. I think everyone understands that. The downside is the fact that, you know, you're kind of – you would have liked to have him rep a game there with Mateer and kind of just get a little bit of comfort, theoretically, before you go up to Michigan in the second game of the year. So, you know, we'll see what it looks like. Like Brody said, very interested in seeing at right guard, because it's felt like, that Noah Best has kind of, you know, cemented himself there as kind of the guy. What does that look like with him and Ozaida? And then whenever Michael comes back, how does that all shift around? So there's still a lot of questions offensive line. I think we got a better idea, certainly these last couple of days. The Foje injury throws a wrinkle into it. But, you know, it's still a lot to be sorted out. And they're going to play with a lot of different lineups, I would think, on Friday against UTEP. Theoretically, right, you get a big lead and you can kind of tinker around with some different things. So we'll see what that looks like on Friday. Elsewhere on this, you know, on this thing, I mean, like I said, not a ton of major shockers. The three wide receivers, as expected, Satania, Trell Harris. There is an or at that other spot with Parker Livingston. And then, obviously, the second-year in-state kid, Elijah Thomas. Brody, you've been kind of reporting on and talking about a little bit that Livingston maybe a little banged up as well. That could influence the way that thing goes there at the that third wide receiver spot to go with Harris and Isaiah Satania, as Elijah Thomas potentially probably a decent to good chance that he'll be the guy getting things started on Friday.
Yeah, Parker Livingston is a little banged up, and I think that could be what ultimately gets Elijah Thomas his first start. But regardless, start or not, you know, both those guys I think are going to play a lot. And I think, you know, one of the best developments of fall camp was the consistency that Elijah Thomas performed with. I mean, that to me was a big storyline coming out of yesterday with the Brent Venables and Ben Arbuckle press conferences. It very much seems like they believe in what he can do. And they've always believed in the talent, but now it seems like it has really clicked for him throughout this fall camp. So I'm very intrigued to see, you know, if he goes out there and he does indeed start on Friday night, what can he do in this game against UTEP? He's one player that I'll be watching very closely. And so, you know, seems like Livingston's status is up in the air right now, and that definitely continues to open the door for Elijah Thomas.
Yeah, I think Elijah Thomas is just like continued progress throughout this fall camp has been really big for them. But I think equally important is just like how quickly Trell Harris kind of picked up, you know, this last month, because, you know, he's a guy that didn't really do anything for them for 7 months. You know, he wasn't running full speed until, you know, basically the end of July. Even at the start of camp, he was a little bit limited. And he goes out there and in, you know, 3.5-4 weeks, secures a starting job, which we all expected when, you know, they signed him out of the transfer portal out of Virginia. But I'm just really intrigued to see what that tandem really looks like, especially with him and Isaiah Satania, because we've heard a lot about, you know, how their skill sets are really complementary to each other. And, you know, we saw what Isaiah Satania could do last year as the number one option. And, you know, I think we all are probably in agreement here that this wide receiver room, when healthy, looks like a lot better than what they had last year. And I know they had some injuries there last year too, but you have guys in Trell Harris and Parker Livingston that have proven production at Power Four programs. Trell Harris obviously led Virginia in receiving last year, was an all ACC guy. You know, Parker Livingston was the number three receiver at Texas. And then you have some interesting pieces, you know, behind them that are, you know, guys that have mostly been developed within this program, mm-hmm. and seeing what they're capable of doing. So I'm really intrigued in seeing what Elijah Thomas does with this opportunity. And I really want to see, you know, what Trell Harris brings to the fold here with them.
Anything on defense that stands out to you guys? I mean, I think for the most part, the starting 11 or 12, if you want to throw in the Sam spot, which was added with Cole Sullivan there, about what everyone thought, right? I mean, you look across this thing, you do have an or at that second defensive end with PJ Adebore and Danny Okoye. Not a shocker there, like we talked about throughout fall. Both guys are going to play a lot. They'll both see the field plenty. Whoever runs out there first, it's really just more of a, you know, semantics thing. I mean, both guys are going to play a lot, get a lot of snaps. Wine to the spot, Stone Jackson, obviously linebackers, Heinicke, Kip Lewis, Reggie Powers gets to start, a Cheetah, Cortland Guillory, Eli Bowen, Peyton Bowen, Michael Bokanowski, the two safeties. Anything at all defensively? I mean, I think more of the questions were kind of just the way it stacked up after a lot of these guys, right? Kind of the depth of it, because you figure you're going to see a lot of them, certainly over the course of the season, and especially on Friday, you would figure almost everyone on defense is going to get some sort of run. But was there anything defensively that caught your guys' eye here on this first depth chart?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think it was just the fact that they added that Sam linebacker position.
And, yeah, kind of interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, hearing Brent Venables talk about it last night on his radio show, it's like it's the same thing as Cheetah, which – I mean, that's been the case. It's just they've never listed as a separate position. And I think it's largely because, you know, they consider Cole Sullivan to be kind of a co-starter there on the defense. And, you know, whether they roll out the Sam linebacker or the Cheetah linebacker or what look they do, I think is going to, you know, depend largely on, you know, opposing personnel and different packages that they see. But, you know, other than that, I mean, there's really nothing really surprising here. I mean, No. You look at this defense and, you know, you take out Cole Sullivan, you look at the 11 other spots, all these guys started their careers at Oklahoma, which, you know, you don't see that happen a lot. And it's a lot of guys that are in their third, fourth, you know, in some cases, fifth seasons there. And I think that really speaks to not just the continuity of this defense, but, you know, why the expectations are so high and kind of what everybody figures will be a top five defense in the country this year.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think the fact that they added that Sam position was pretty intriguing. To me, it seems like, you know, they probably have a ton of confidence in the secondary enough to say, hey, we could go with a heavier look with a traditional Sam linebacker instead of playing the Cheetah spot at some points if they wanted to in some games. So I think that's intriguing. Outside that, I mean, we talked all about Wyatt Gilmore, kind of he was going to be that fourth edge. And there's no or attached to him. Defensive tackle is still something that I'm really interested to see what happens this season. You know, it sounds like there was good things to say at the press conference yesterday about Bishop Thomas. You know, and so what happens there with him, Trent Wilson, Nigel Smith, Tank Carrington, I think that's going to be something to watch moving forward. But, yeah, I didn't feel there was a whole lot defensively just to take away from that. Kind of seems pretty chalk.
Yeah, no doubt. No big surprises on defense, definitely. Same thing on special teams. Nothing that shocks you, obviously. Grayson Miller does secure the punter job. That was a little bit of a conversation throughout fall, but he is the number one punter. Listen, if you're that into that sort of thing. Satania is back at punt returner. No shakeup there. Again, to be expected. Jacob Jordan, the second guy on that line. Trell Harris, third. The two kick returners are Lloyd Avant and Jonathan Hatton, which is kind of interesting. Yep. Hatton. I don't know if they're actually going to return kicks, so I don't want to get too excited about it. Maybe a little more than we saw. They only returned two last year. So it's kind of fun to have Hatton back there, but I just don't know if it's actually going to matter, for lack of a better way to put that, once the season starts, because Oklahoma has kind of shown they're not really too interested in returning kicks generally. We'll see if that changes this season. But, yeah, everything else pretty straightforward. Not a ton of stunners on this first depth chart, which I think is a good thing.
I was going to say – I want to see Jonathan Hatton return a kick. I just want to see it once. That's just me, though. 235 pounds running down there. Good luck. But
yeah, on the kick return front, I mean, like we said, they returned fewer kicks than anybody else in the country last season, and their average was not great, which is why they didn't attempt more. You know, why risk it when you can just get the ball at the 25-yard line? But, you know, speaking to Doug Deacon before the start of fall camp, and even in the spring, he was like, we'd like to return more, but we want to be able to know that we can get better than the 25-yard line. And that's where I think Lloyd Avant can be really interesting, because he was really effective as a true freshman kick returner at Tulsa a couple years ago. Did it a little bit at Colorado State last year, but when he was at Tulsa, I think he was like one of the top 15 kick returners just based on average in the country that year. So I think he can kind of bring an added dimension there to make them a little bit exciting. But I think it is interesting, like, just going with the two running backs back there, guys that we expect to also have, you know, pretty sizable roles on offense as well.
Yeah, no doubt. So there you have it. First depth chart of the year. We'll see how it adjusts, and we'll see what the offensive line actually does look like on Friday when they run out there with the wrinkle with Foje getting nicked up and all that sort of thing. So with that in the books, let's look ahead to the season. This is our final season prediction show. I just put it in the chat. I want to hear from everyone, and it's where we're going to start. I want to kind of break it up, offense and defense, kind of get our final thoughts out there. Then we're going to pick a breakout player on each side of the football before we lock in our final record prediction and CFP, yes or no, that sort of thing, at the very tail end. Starting on offense, I'll just open it this way. How much better are you expecting? I mean, obviously, it's going to be better. It has to be, right? Or at least we all think it will be. 79th in scoring last year. You know, it feels like they've upgraded at the skill positions really kind of across the board. You feel much better about what they have at wide receiver, certainly a lot better at tight end. Offensive line, beat up, but still should be, you think, taking a step. And hopefully nothing major. It sounds like, you know, everything that they have, they should be at full strength sooner rather than later on the offensive line. You're certainly expecting a better version of Mateer. Just, you know, how much better is realistic? What sort of jump are you thinking offensively this season, guys? Obviously, because at the end of last year, it was a major struggle. Can they find a more better groove and you know, be more consistent on that side of the football this time around?
I expect, you know, assuming good health, that, you know, this offense is going to be much improved going from year one to year two of Ben Arbuckle. And I think part of that is just you look at what transfer quarterbacks in the SEC have traditionally done in the last several years, and they play a lot better in that second year. And a lot of it's going to be on John Mateer just being better and being healthy and, you know, being more comfortable within this offense and the pieces around him. And I think that's another big part of it. You know, we talk about what they were able to retain along the offensive line with four returning starters and bringing another veteran in Demarion Harris, but also just upgrading the skill positions around him. Obviously, you're bringing back Isaiah Satania, but getting a Trell Harris, getting a Parker Livingston, having guys like Elijah Thomas come along, you know, Britton, you know, signing a Jonathan Hatton while still retaining, you know, Xavier Robinson and Torrey Blaylock, and totally revamping that tight end room. I think there's like a lot there to show that this can be a much improved offense. Now, I'm not expecting it to be a top 25 offense by any means, yeah. But, you know, speaking to a couple coaches, you know, at the start of fall camp, like their goal is they want to, you know, average in the, you know, low to mid 30s points per game. And if, you know, they can do that, like last year, that would have been a top 30, top 40 offense. And I think that like that should be the goal, because if you're averaging 30-ish points per game with this defense, like you're going to win a lot of games, because I don't see many instances where this defense is going to give up four touchdowns or more.
I think they'll be considerably better. I like what they have on this offense. Obviously, with John Mateer just being healthy this year, another offseason, I think he'll be what he was before the injury and better than that. I'm intrigued by the run game, and I feel like Jonathan Hatton is going to be the running back one at some point this season. I feel like that is imminent, but I don't know that. The thing that I have belief in is going to be Dylan McCullough and his ability to develop this running back room and discern who should be getting the carries out there. So I think just having him on staff, believing that he'll be able to get this running game right, that gives me more confidence in this offense this season. And I think they have the guys to do it. I mean, Jonathan Hatton, I think, will be really solid. Xavier Robinson, you know, we'll see early on, I think, if he can go take that job. Lloyd Avant, I think Andy Bass will probably get a little bit of run. Torrey Blaylock when he gets healthy. So I feel like they have the guys there. Receiver, like Tom mentioned at the beginning, just the fact that Trell Harris, you know, he was got back healthy and he was good. And now we're going to see him, you know, fully healthy on Friday night. I like the pairing of him and Isaiah Satania. And then I really like when you throw Elijah Thomas in there with them, and then Parker Livingston. I think they have the weapons. Then you get into tight end. So I really think that they have what they need to have on this roster to go have a much better offense this season. I believe in it. We did our Sooners Illustrated roundtable. You guys, I was the only one to say top 25 scoring offense. I'm probably wrong on that. You know, so we'll just go ahead. I'll own that now, but I do think they'll be considerably better this season.
Well, hey, if it happens, you can be like, hey, I nailed that. Yeah. I believe.
Stand on it.
You know, well, I'll likely miss both, because I was the odd man out on the defense one as well. So it'll, you know, I had to, we couldn't all say, you know, true on all of them. So I was just being the devil's advocate there.
Yeah, apparently. What about what Zofix brought up here? Just the offensive line injuries. Does it worry you having these guys in and out? Does it has the injuries, and with Mike Lust still working his way back, and Jay Sooner Fan Forever asks, you know, when are we thinking Jake will be back? I mean, bro, you can chime in as well. I mean, it sounds pretty positive. I mean, I'm thinking after the bye week, is like the latest, and hopefully sooner. I think things are moving positively that it can be sooner than that. But, you know, do the injuries worry you guys? I mean, is that on the offensive line, is that something that has altered your opinion in any meaningful way, you know, the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think Michael will – I would say the bye week, but that's just – I don't know. You would think it would be maybe a little sooner, but – at this point in time, I don't feel comfortable saying I think he'll be back by Georgia or I think he'll be back by
– Sure, sure.
I don't think you rush him back. That's just the way I view it. Now, if Foje was a longer injury, maybe that changes. But I think Foje, that's very minor. I think he'll be back. It concerns me a little bit, just because the quality of the two players that – really, I'll just say Michaela. Having him down, I think, is a little concerning. We'll see. It certainly sounds like Noah Best has been really, really good. And so I didn't really expect him to be as good as it sounds like he's been in fall camp. And so that definitely helps my confidence level in this offensive line. So if he can go out there and he can kind of prove it, especially against a team like Michigan, I don't think I would be too worried about that offensive line right now. And again, since Foje's injury is a little minor, it doesn't really change it. But I've never thought that their depth, particularly at tackle on the offensive line, has been great. So right now I'm not too concerned, but if they keep getting banged up, it would be a little concerning to me at least.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as Brody there. I think if the Ryan Foje injury was a little bit more serious, it would raise a little more red flags for me, just because the importance that he serves with his versatility. Like I know on the depth chart, they had other guys listed as the backup tackles. But functionally speaking, when everybody else is healthy, if something were to happen to Michael Fasusi or Imarion Harris, Ryan Foje is your number three tackle at either one of those spots. So having him out right now, I'm not concerned about. But if he were to miss like extended time or anything, or that injury was worse than they thought it was, I would be pretty concerned, because then you're talking about you need a guy like Deacon Schmidt to kind of accelerate his timeline. You need a guy like Peyton Joseph or Fred Hinton to step up and be prepared to be called upon if something were to happen to one of the other tackles. But right now, I don't think it's too concerning.
We'll see. It's not ideal, certainly. But like you said, hopefully you get Ryan back in there. And he, Jason Fan, brought it up. I mentioned this earlier. Not ideal to have Foje, his first game at center, be theoretically in the big house. Do I think he can handle it? I do. Because he's a good football player and he played in some tough environments last year. Center's a different animal. It's not what he's used to. You have to acknowledge that. But, it's not ideal, obviously, right? It's certainly not ideal. Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you want it to be his first start at center at Michigan? Probably not, in a perfect world. But, again, he's a guy that played a lot of football last season, started six games at multiple spots. And the biggest thing really with him starting at center for the first time at Michigan would just be the communication factor in an environment like that. I think it's a little bit less of a worry when it's an 11 a.m. kick. If it were a primetime game or something, just a different environment, I think would be a little bit more intimidating there for a guy mm-hmm. making his first start at center. But he played in some tough environments. Like you said, man, going into Tennessee, going into Alabama last year, those are big time environments with a lot on the line in those games. And he performed.
Yeah. And he's been working at center the last few weeks of practice. So it's not like they just threw him out there this week and said, you're going to be the center. And, then he gets injured and now he's not dealing with a lot of time working as a center. Look, I don't think Oklahoma's putting him out there at center if they're not confident in his ability to handle all that. I think that's why he is the starting center. So, yeah, as far as the injury is concerned, if you are wondering what the deal is with Foje, we do have an update posted on our board available right now to just go read and see what we're saying on that. We've talked about it through here. But, yeah, I think it's going to be something interesting to follow. But I don't think it's too concerning right now. I think it's a great point that Foje is kind of effectively your utility player on the offensive line.
Yeah.
If you don't have him, all of a sudden that tackle depth, it looks really bleak, because you're looking at maybe even trying to get Heath those out to bounce up to tackle if you're not confident in some of those guys. So, yeah, I think his health, I think Foje's health matters almost more than anyone else on the offensive line just because of that alone.
Mm-hmm.
Give me an offensive breakout player, and we'll flip over to defense. Last year, this would have easily been Isaiah Satania, right? I mean, I think we were all kind of, excited about Satania coming in from Arkansas and the potential there, but obviously ended up being their best offensive weapon by far a year ago. Who could you see doing that? And obviously, breakout would tend to imply someone who either didn't play a lot last year or is new. I mean, I guess you could talk me into a couple of these transfer guys that have played well in other places that are coming in. Offensive breakout player, someone you're banking on that Oklahoma didn't have last year that you think is going to be a huge part of this thing this time around.
I want to say Trell Harris at receiver, but I'm going to go a different route just because, he's proven it at a Power 4 program before, and he's done it. So, him having a big season wouldn't be a surprise. But I'm going to go with Jonathan Hatton. I'm with Brody. It's not going to surprise me at all if, mm-hmm. We get to midseason and he's the starting running back for this team. He just – he has something that these other backs don't necessarily have. And I don't think that's not a knock on Xavier Robinson, who, when he's been healthy, has been very effective, or a Lloyd Avant, who has, by all accounts, has been just steady as can be, consistent, does everything they ask for him, does all this, little things right. And that's why he could be the starter Friday night. But Hatton has another gear. He's the biggest running back on their roster and might be the fastest as well. And you can't teach that. And so I would not be shocked at all if, we get to the end of the season and Jonathan Hatton is this team's leading rusher and number one back.
Yeah, that would have been my answer if you didn't go there. I fully believe in Jonathan Hatton, and I think it's inevitable that he'll be the RB1 at some point. That's just my take on it.
Sure.
Just with his talent, it seems like that's eventually going to be your guy. But outside of him, I think the next obvious answer here, right, is Elijah Thomas. Be curious to see where Josh goes, but I'll go with Elijah Thomas. I'll say that one. I think he'll be that breakout player that, seems like they needed him to be this season, because I think it really takes your wide receiver room almost to a different level having him. I think we were all very confident and liked what they had in the top three guys with Satania, Harris, and Livingston. But then you throw in Elijah Thomas, who just seems to be a true playmaker, very talented athletically. And it gives you yet another weapon in that receiver room. So there's still part of me that needs to see it in a game, just because we haven't yet. But I do believe that Elijah Thomas will be a breakout player on this offense.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with both those completely, obviously, and especially Hatton. I think that's the one that we're all really, really interested in getting to see on Friday for the first time in an actual game. Just the hype has done nothing but build throughout the summer and certainly throughout this fall camp, and feels like he's one of those dudes who can really elevate all this to another level. And that's not to say anything against Xavier Robinson or Lloyd Avant or even a Torrey Blaylock when he comes back, but Hatton is just one of those guys that it feels different with him. So we'll see, but I agree with that totally. Those are the two obvious. If maybe throw out one other one that's a little less and he's an older guy, but he's new to OU, Rocky Beers might have a better season than I think most people are maybe nationally talking about. I think OU fans have come around to the idea that this guy might be a pretty big passing threat for Oklahoma. But, just the way the camp has unfolded, I love Hayden Hansen as well. And we talked to Hayden on Sunday night. He's great. He's one of the best dudes on the team. If you didn't see that interview, go watch it because it's on YouTube. He's phenomenal. But Rocky Beers, just, the returns have been really good in camp. It feels like there's a definite world where he is really productive. And you look up at the end of the year and you're like, man, Rocky Beers had a nice year production-wise in terms of just putting up some yardage, taking care of the middle of the field, developing some rapport with John Mateer. So, he's a little bit cheating because he's an older guy, but he's one that, I don't know if nationally people are as aware of him as maybe they will be by the time the season's over. So he's one that stands out to me.
Not just an older guy, but literally the oldest guy on the team, I think. He's what, seventh year, graduated high school in 2020?
Yeah, you're probably right then. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you. I wouldn't be surprised if – we get to the end of the season and he has the second most touchdowns on this team, receiving touchdowns.
Yeah, right.
Just so I think as a red zone threat, I think he could be right there. You look at what he did last year at Colorado State, where their offense wasn't that great, but he was their leading receiver and was really good in the red zone too. So yeah.
Any quick hot takes before we go over to defense as far as leading receiver, leading rusher? Are we thinking Satania and Xavier Robinson, or are you going to go – is anyone going different name on either of those?
I would do Satania and Hatton personally.
Really? You're going all in on Hatton.
I'm going all in. I feel most confident if I had to pick one of the three rushing touchdowns, rushing yards, rushing attempts. Feel most confident in Hatton rushing touchdowns. Just because him in the goal line, I think he'll be able to really get it done there. I think rushing yards might be a little bolder, but that I think that's the way I see it personally.
Yeah, I think I'll lean on the Hatton thing just because like I said, I picked him as my breakout offensive guy, and it wouldn't surprise me if he led them in rushing this year. So I'll go with that. Receiving, I think it's either going to be Satania or Harris. I think adding a guy like Trell Harris is going to make life a lot easier on Isaiah Satania. And, you know, similarly, just having more weapons around this offense is going to provide more one-on-one matchups for guys. And, you know, Trell Harris is a guy that can be a deep ball threat this offense didn't necessarily have as much last year. So I'm going to lean Satania too, but it would not surprise me if Harris was finished the season with 1,000 yards.
Yeah, that's a great point. I thought about Trell Harris a lot this weekend, just watching Virginia put the beat down on NC State, man. They did look impressive. I thought of any week zero team, Virginia was the most impressive. But yeah, Trell Harris, I think it'll be a big season for him. I wonder if Satania and his ability to have the big play threat will just even further open things up for a guy like Trell Harris, who last year at Virginia, he was their number one guy.
Yeah.
And this year, he's the number two guy at OU. So I think that could really benefit him as well.
Yeah, it was funny because obviously Oklahoma didn't play in week zero. We spoke to Trell Harris on Sunday, and I asked him if he got a chance to watch Virginia because he still keeps in touch with a lot of those guys. And he was like, yeah, and asked him what he thought about it. And he was just like, it was a lot of running the ball. You know, they only attempted 11 passes with Bo Pribula, completed 9 of them and had a couple passing touchdowns. But I think he'll be pleased with the amount of passes that Oklahoma will be throwing this season.
Yeah, I bet so. Let's go over defense. Question here, is not how much better will it be, but can it be better? This is a defense that was in the top 10 in scoring last year, was obviously one of the best in the country last year, created negative plays. The turnovers weren't there early. They came later in the year and obviously played a major role in the November run. You think of the strip sack from Heinicke, Arm Mason Scoop in Knoxville, the pick six for Eli Bowen, the strip sack for Taylor Wine in Tuscaloosa. I mean, these are plays that define the season. I guess the way I'll just pose this on the defensive side, kind of final thoughts on defense. Are you expecting it to be legitimately better? Are you kind of more in a wait and see mode in that regard? You replaced some huge pieces of last year, but you have a ton of big pieces back. Kind of feels like they're positioned to be even better than last year, which is crazy to say considering how good they were a year ago. Defensively, what are you thinking? Improvement, and where are the improvements going to be? What are some thoughts on defense as we kind of head into the season finally?
Yeah, so last season they finished fourth in defensive SP Plus according to ESPN. I think this is going to be another top five unit. It's going to be in the conversation for the best defense in the country. I still have a couple questions about depth at a couple spots just because, like we discussed, they have some unproven guys that they're going to lean on, but guys that have been in this system for a couple years already. But I think the top line is better than it was last year. And that's even with losing an All-American like R. Mason Thomas. Like, I think across the defensive line, whether it's Danny Okoye or PJ Adeboare starting at that one defensive end spot, but bringing back Taylor Wine and then Davis Stone and Jaden Jackson in the middle, like we discussed, probably the best defensive tackle tandem in the country. You know, three really good linebackers in Kip Lewis and Owen Heinicke, and adding Cole Sullivan in there. Obviously, Kip and Owen led this team in tackles last year. That secondary is really solid with Eli Bowen and Cortland Guillory and, Reggie Powers at Cheetah and bringing back a Jacoby Johnson and having Peyton Bowen in there. Like, to me, if there's one area where this defense can improve on, it's just the passing defense. They were solid last year, but, comparatively speaking to, where the run defense was, where the pass rush was, it was just a little bit behind. But I think with everything that you're bringing back, you could expect that passing defense to be a little bit better this year. So I'm all in on this defense being a top five unit again this season.
Yeah, I think this defense will be great. I think top 10 easily. So really like what they have across all three levels of the defense. I agree that the only questions I still have right now is the depth. But I think it's something you trust Brent Venables and this entire defensive staff to figure out. You know, they're going to put the right guys out there. And it seems like at all three levels, you've seen a Wyatt Gilmore have a good camp, a Bishop Thomas have a good camp, James Nesta, and then, you know, Amaron Robinson and a Tristan Haynes. So I think that that is, I think those guys emerging will be interesting to see how they actually look come the Michigan game, for example. But yeah, I believe in this defense as well. I think the core of why is David Stone, Jaden Jackson, Kip Lewis, Owen Heineke. And then obviously their secondary is great. But those four guys, I think, give me just a ton of confidence in this defense.
Yeah, I agree. I actually do think there's a very real world where the defense is even better than it was last year. As awesome as it was, you know, there are some questions. You know, do you have a one-for-one replacement for Kendall Daniels? Cole Sullivan seems like the guy for that. And he's had an awesome camp. We talked about it, you know, on the podcast throughout the month of August. The returns have been obviously fantastic, but Kendall Daniels was just, he was awesome. He was awesome last year. He was perfect. Can they replicate that? And then, yeah, I mean, if I was going to express a concern, it's a mild concern, but we've talked about the last couple of weeks, like, I don't really know what the cheetah options are beyond Reggie Powers and then Cole Sullivan as that Sam big cheetah, however you want to put it. Like, after that, it is kind of like up in the air. And I think we really like Jeremiah Newcomb, but he's been banged up. He was hurt. He was out all last year. LeBron Bauer is a freshman, you know, and he's on the depth chart as the third guy there. You know, James Nesta, you know, I feel like probably could handle it, but we haven't seen him a lot either. So, like, if you did lose a Powers or a Cole Sullivan, what does that look like? Look, the defense gets the benefit of the doubt the last couple of years that they have the guys, someone would step up that we're not expecting, whatever it may be. But it is a little thin-ish on paper, certainly. So we'll see what that looks like. Hopefully both guys just stay healthy and it's a moot point. But that's one thing if I was going to express a concern. But otherwise, I mean, I love that they have a corner. I think it's maybe the deepest position on the team. The defensive line feels like it's going to be awesome again, one of the best in the country. Safety is a little thin-ish, but you still feel okay about it. And so, yeah, I think the defense is going to be one of the five best in the country. And there's a world where at the end of the year, it is heavily in those convos for best in the entire sport, which is, you know, pretty impressive. The fact that Oklahoma's got to this point and Brent Venables has got this defense to this point.
Yeah, yeah. I will say to your Kendall Daniels question, and, you know, I don't want to step too much on who I assume will be Brody's breakout player here, but they love Reggie Powers at that cheetah spot. And I know he doesn't have the same size as Kendall Daniels. Sure. And obviously that's why you have a Cole Sullivan. But I mean, even listening to Brent Venables last night, like mentioning him in the same breath as Roy Williams and Tony Jefferson, like they have really high expectations for what he's going to do in that lead role.
Yeah. That caught my eye. Just the fact that he's being mentioned in the same conversation as those guys. But I think it is a good point. If he went down and it's a little bleak, I like Jeremiah Newcomb, but you still have the health concerns. Is he actually going to be able to go? I think you would see probably either the Bowen brothers go play cheetah before you would see a LeBron Bauer.
Yeah. Interesting.
That's my take. I'm very high on Reggie Powers, and we can get into this, but I think he's the most valuable player on this defense, not just because of what he brings to the table, but also because of that depth factor. If you lose him, where do you go? It's very uncertain. I think that plays into why I have him as the most valuable player on this defense.
And you've talked about it, you know, last week, Brody and I did the camp, you know, Stock Riser show that Reggie maybe had as good of a camp as anyone, maybe the best. And you talked about that camp MVP has been kind of thrown around from Oklahoma side of things. So, yeah, I'm in as well. I mean, Reggie's going to have a huge year, and he's a guy who really came on last year, and you're expecting another jump certainly from him. On that note, do you want to go ahead, Brody? Your defensive breakout player, is it Reggie? Is that where we're headed?
Yeah, we can get that out of the way. Very high on Reggie Powers. I just think he'll have, you know, assuming he stays healthy, a really big season, because he is kind of the prototypical cheetah for this defense. Like, this is kind of what they're looking for. And, you know, it seems like he's really improved physically. And, you know, talking with what he's done throughout scrimmages and stuff, it's not just that he's going to be really good in coverage as a cheetah, but it seems like he's able to come down and make a lot of tackles in the run game. You know, I have some bold predictions around him, but I think he's going to be very involved in the run game. I think he'll get some sacks. So I'm looking for a big season from Reggie Powers. Really, I was really impressed last season in that Alabama game with the way Alabama was the first Alabama game. They were not really good running the ball, so they did all those different short extensions of the run game with their short passes, and I felt like Reggie Powers did a great job in that game shutting a lot of that down. I think this season, with the increased volume, he'll have a breakout season this year.
I will go along the defensive line, and I will say Danny Okoye as my breakout.
Yeah.
I don't think that surprises a lot of people. We've talked about it a lot on this podcast and you know, on the site, but you know, we've seen these guys at defensive end the last few years make a year three leap. You know, R. Mason Thomas did it 2 years ago. Taylor Wine certainly did it this year. And I think Danny Okoye is going to be that guy this year. You know, I'm a little surprised he didn't play more last year, just because I think it was before the like opening week of the season when we spoke to Brent Venables, he was talking about how excited he was to just unleash Danny Okoye on the SEC. And then listening to Danny in fall camp talk about how he wasn't mature enough to play the role that he probably wanted to play last year, and you know, was a little difficult to coach at times and took some adjusting coming from, you know, homeschool and, you know, getting used to the authority of, you know, Brent Venables obviously, but also Miguel Chavis off the edge, and just kind of how he's kind of grown over the last year and a half or so. It sounded, you know, listening to him talk about it was just really, really impressive for, you know, a 21 year old kid. So I think he's just going to be primed for a huge season this year. Again, I don't know who's going to start between him and PJ off the edge, mm-hmm. but those guys are firmly number two and number three in terms of snap counts off the edge for them. And I think Danny Okoye is going to be really productive as an edge rusher in this defense.
Yeah, I agree totally. You know, been on the Okoye train for a while. Love the way he plays. Love the physicality, you know. Just it feels like it's time. Like you said, year three kind of has been when these guys have kind of really started to burst on the scene, especially at edge under Miguel Chavis. And so you're just expecting kind of the world for Danny this year. And so very, very excited to see him. It feels like big things are on the way for Danny Okoye. And if him and PJ can both be, you know, if PJ can make that big jump too, not that PJ hasn't been playing well because he did have a good year last year, but if he can stay healthy and take another step, defensive end is going to be really good again for Oklahoma, obviously with Taylor Wine kind of leading the charge there. You know, I'm going to stay on the defensive line. I'm going to go a little bit of a, I don't know if it's a hot take. I don't think it is, but if this guy has a big year, then Oklahoma's going to be really good. I'm going to go Trent Wilson, year two. I've been a big Trent Wilson fan for a while. It's maybe a little early just in his second year, but man, he's second on the depth chart after Jaden Jackson with an or with him and Nigel Smith. But nevertheless, like, he's going to play. One of the most terrifying dudes ever that I've covered at OU. The guy, I'm in on this dude being a star. Again, maybe it's a year early, but it just feels like rotationally, kind of like what we saw Stone from year one to year two really start to come on last year. Obviously now you're going to year three. David Stone's considered one of the best defensive tackles in the country. Similar trajectory for Trent Wilson. Not that he's necessarily going to be like that. Obviously, David Stone is, you don't just come up with David Stones every year, but really, really excited to see Trent Wilson this season. And so I'm going to go with him as being a breakout guy, a guy that we haven't seen a ton of, obviously, last year, that I think is going to play quite a bit. And by the end of the year, we're talking about like, oh, yeah, they got him another one. You know, Todd Bates did it again, sort of a thing. So I'm kind of in on Trent Wilson.
Yeah, for a second when you said you were going with a little bit of bold take, I thought you were going to say Bishop Thomas.
That's what I thought.
It would not surprise me if Bishop Thomas like had a similar season as like a Grayson Halton did last year.
Yeah.
Just kind of very similar skill sets. And again, he's not a guy that you're going to see and looks overly impressive like a David Stone or a Jaden Jackson, but he's just played a lot of football at this point in his career. And like we've heard Brent Venable said, he's got a little bit of savviness to him. And I'm really curious to see how he adapts to this system in, you know, what would be his fifth year in third, fourth different school. Lost count, but yeah, I'm curious to see him. And I thought you were going to go that direction for a second.
Yeah. I want to see one of those guys step up and kind of submit themselves as that third defensive tackle, whether that be Trent Wilson or Bishop Thomas, or maybe Nigel Smith is a gamer and he comes in and he does it, or Tank Carrington. It would be really nice to see one of those guys come up and you just see it on game day. I think the two favorites for that would definitely be Bishop Thomas and Trent Wilson. But yeah, those guys getting extended run, I think, is one of the more intriguing things about Friday night's game against UTEP, for me at least. Just seeing what those guys in the interior defensive line can do, because you have confidence that Todd Bates is going to develop those guys and get them right. I'm just curious which of the four is really going to go out there and look the best.
Any other bold defensive takes? Anybody going to win a major award? You going to give Kip Lewis the buckus? You going to go? Anyone want to get out there with it? It's your time.
Is this bold? Jane Jackson, first team All SEC. Is that
That's boldish.
I think it's bold just because he's been a little bit overlooked.
Yeah.
And again, I don't think it's so much a knock on Jaden as it is a, you know, a testament to how talented defensive tackles are in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about like a Will Eccles at, you know, Ole Miss, and some of these other guys are just been around and played a lot of ball and produced. And, you know, Jaden's done that too. He's entering his third year as a starter. And I know he's always kind of been a little bit overshadowed because he was in the same class and was high school teammates with David Stone. And everybody wants to talk about David Stone as a five-star. But, man, Jaden Jackson's going to have a long NFL career.
Yeah, like, and what I like about him is this could be his first season, you know, hopefully he's healthy. I mean, mm-hmm. freshman year, he dealt with some injuries. Sophomore year, obviously, dealt with a lot of injuries. So I'm interested to see if he can fully be healthy this season. What does it look like? I think – you know, he could potentially be in that conversation at least. So that would be one for me.
I'm gonna get out there with one a little bit. I'm gonna say Taylor Wine leads the SEC in sacks. I think Taylor Wine's gonna have just a monster year. I'm ready to see it. I know I was just talking about Okoye, but don't forget about Taylor Wine, man. He was so good last year. Just everything I've been told and just getting to talk to him the few times we have, laser focused, leader of the team, one of the captains. All in on Taylor Wine having a huge year. So I'll get bold with it. I'll say Leezy ATC and sacks. It's going to take a big year, but why not?
I'll go Kip Lewis over 100 tackles for the first time in his career. Mm. I think he's had like 65 in each of the last three seasons.
Yeah.
I just think he's going to be all over the place for them.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
And I'll say, I don't know if he'll win it, but I will go ahead and is it the Thorpe Award for the safeties?
Yeah.
I'll say Peyton Bowen is a finalist for the Thorpe Award.
Okay. I almost thought about saying Peyton Bowen something with it. I think he's going to have a great year, too. I'm really excited for that. If you had him take a shot on who's going to get the most interceptions on his team, who would you say?
Guillory.
Think so?
Cortland.
I think so.
He didn't have one last year.
Yeah, but he got his hands on so many passes. Yeah. Like he led them in pass breakups. To me, it would probably either be Guillory or Peyton Bowen.
Yep.
Just like as you know, kind of that center fielder out there. But I'm gonna go with Guillory.
Yeah. Here's a question I would have for the two of you as we do season predictions. Does Tate Sandell make one from 60 or further this season?
Do they let him try one from 60 or it's almost a tougher question. Do they even let him try?
Well, I think it depends on the wind.
What Brent said the other day, he said Venables, he said he made one from 65.
68, I think it was.
I don't know if I buy that. But
I think my hot take with Tate Sandell is that he will have fewer 50-yard attempts this season. Not because they don't trust him or anything. I just think that the offense is going to be improved enough that he's not going to be in as many situations to try 50, 55-yard kicks. Again, he's still top one kicker in the country. But they're not going to need him to kick as many 50-yarders this season, in my opinion.
And maybe they'd be more willing to, you know, go for it on fourth down a little more. Last year, it was like any chance time you got a chance to get points, do it. You know, maybe it won't be as dire this time. What do you think, Brody? Is he going to hit a 60-yarder?
I don't know. It'd be cool to see him try one. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Maybe if there's enough wind, you never know. Could have just a windy day and just see what he can do. So that'll be interesting. Do we think there's any punt return touchdowns this season from Isaiah Satania?
Gotta be. I felt like it was inevitable last year and it never happened.
I was going to say last year, like especially those first couple games, just felt like it was only a matter of time before he broke one. So I think he'll get one this year.
Yeah, I'm going to say he got one because it did feel like last year he's going to pop one and it just never quite happened. Another full slate. It'll happen. It might happen on Friday. All right, before we get out of here, let's lock in final thoughts and predictions on the team and what they do this season. This is it. You know, we've talked about it the last 7 months or however long, going back to spring into last season, about how good we think they could be this year and how they have everything on the table to get back to the playoff, all this stuff. We have all the data we could possibly have going into before they've played a game. So lock it in. How many games do they win? Do they get back to the playoff? If you want to dabble into how far they're going to the playoff, feel free. I feel like that's kind of hard without knowing like what the bracket would be. But what are we thinking? What's our actual final thoughts, expectations for how good this Oklahoma team is going to be? I had people do it in the chat, getting a lot of 10-2s. We had 1-9-3. It's about the ballpark, I think, probably all going to be. Yeah. What do you guys think? Final predictions for what Oklahoma actually does in 2026.
I go back and forth between 10-2 and 9-3. And I think this is Brent Venables' best team, like his most complete team on paper that he's had at Oklahoma. And I just think the difficulty of that schedule is like the one hurdle. I think I discussed it on the podcast last week or the week before, but you know, this could be one of the, you know, 10 best teams in the country, but just because of this schedule, they could lose three games. That being said, if they go 9-3, this team could still make the playoff. Like a 9-3 team is going to make the playoff at some point. And when you look at Oklahoma's schedule, like that is what a 9-3 playoff team schedule looks like. But I'm going to lean 10-2, but it would not surprise me if they go 9-3.
I was 9-3 for a while, but I think recently I've started to fade Texas a little bit. I'm just not as high on them coming out of fall camp. So I would go 10-2. I think the Michigan game is just so important to get that one with the way the schedule is set up to be. So I'll go 10-2. I think my kind of bold take with the record is that they lose one of the Texas A&M Ole Miss games at home. That's just my take, but I think 10-2 with a loss to one of those two teams is the way I see it.
I was going to joke. Did you go from 9-3 to 10-2 because New Mexico's starting quarterback is out for the year?
Hey, could have been a sleeper game. Remember that conversation was being had about Temple last season. Don't sleep on New Mexico.
I mean, New Mexico. If their quarterback was healthy, like that is a sleeper, like G6 playoff contender. But now.
Yep.
They were gonna be a little annoying for Oklahoma, I think, in week three. But now with their quarterback out, I think that makes things.
Well, and sandwiched, you know, in between Ann Arbor and Athens, kind of a little bit of a tricky spot, you know. I agree. They still could put up a fight in that game. Maybe more than OU fan. It's not gonna be like UTEP. UTEP, OU should win by a lot. New Mexico might hang around at least for a little while, maybe. I'm right with you guys. I'm gonna go with 10-2. That's kind of where I've been for a while. I do think they beat Texas this year. I'm kind of with Brody. Like, I just the vibes are not great. Some key injuries. You know, Arch not having a great camp. I don't know. You know, it just feels like Oklahoma. They need to get over that. They almost like they need it so bad that I'm just gonna believe that they're gonna be able to do it. You know, so I think Oklahoma wins in the Cotton Bowl. If you know, not that they can't win in Athens, but it's hard to expect it. That is such a brutal,
most difficult game on their schedule
this year. And you have to go to Athens, so that's going to be really tough. And then, you know, just if I was going to pick another game for them to lose somewhere, it's really hard because I think, like Brody said, I think A&M and Ole Miss both coming into Norman are going to be tough, right? I mean, and you know, Ole Miss came in Norman one last year, right? So it's not like it's unheard of by any means. And I do think that those other road games, while not as flashy, are tricky. I think Starkville is tricky. I think Gainesville has a chance to be tricky because I think John Summerall is a pretty good coach. So just between all of those, it just feels, you know, thinking they're going to win all of them is probably a bit much. But I do think they go 10-2. And I think they get back to the playoff. Again, hard to say without a bracket. I like to think they could win a playoff game and try to get to that final eight and kind of see where things are at from there. But obviously no telling where they would play, who they would play, you know, what 10-2 would get them. Last year they were the 8 seed, but maybe this year it's higher or lower. I mean, who knows, right? So, but I think that they should be a playoff team this year, and I think that if they can get into the dance with the way they play defense, assuming that Mateer has the year we think he's going to have, they could win some games in the playoff. I mean, Miami showed it last year. Like, you just got to get in there. It's different. It's a different mindset than it used to be. Obviously, we all have to kind of reconfigure our brains. Like, 10-2 and getting in and having a chance is like you're good with that. So I think Oklahoma's gonna have a really good year. So we'll see. Final thoughts on anything? This is it.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'm with you. Like I think if they make the playoffs, they have a chance to make some noise. And I think that this could be the first Oklahoma team to win a playoff game. Like they've made the playoffs several times, but they've not won a game in the postseason. I know, you know, several of those were when it was just a 4-team playoff, and it's a little bit harder when you're talking about, you know, how small the margin for error is there. But you know, I think this team can make it to the postseason and win a game.
Yeah, I would take him for that. I would take him to win a game in the college football playoff, maybe even two. But yeah, we'll see. Hard to know that with not seeing the bracket, but yeah.
I'm excited. I think we're all excited. We're ready to get this thing going. Finally, you know, we're close. A few more days, Friday night. All three of us will be at the stadium. We'll have the game preview show on Thursday. That'll be not live. We'll record that. It'll go out at noon. That'll be every Friday at noon is the goal. Obviously, this week, Thursday, with it being everything moved up a day. Or we'll kind of lock in our final thoughts on the UTEP game in particular. We'll kind of get into what we're going to be watching for, score predictions, that sort of thing. We'll do that all season long. And then new this year, Brody and I are going to be live just like this after every game. We're going to do that every Saturday. So everyone who's in the live chat, I thank you so much for jumping in. First time we did a live show, we were not sure at all if people were going to be in. And so shout out to everyone who did jump in live and commented. It's awesome. That's what we want. And so after every game, we're going to do the game, obviously. We're going to go do the post-game press conference with Brent Venables, Ben Arbuckle, and the team. And then Brody and I are going to jump out, and we're going to go live right here on YouTube. And so we want to hear from you guys every game day, all season long. So we'll do that late Saturday, Friday night, probably like pushing midnight by the time we actually can go. But we're going to do that all season long. So we'll talk to you guys then as well. And we're excited. Give me a fun season. Again, use that promo code underneath Tom. Subscribe. Be with us every single day. I know a lot of people are confused about the FOJ stuff. All the details are over there. So I keep up, subscribe, be with us every single day. So I think that's it. We'll be back on Thursday again for the game preview. And then we'll be live Friday all day, full boots on the coverage, all ground all day on Friday from Norman as Oklahoma finally gets this season underway. So for Tom Green, Brody Lusk, I'm Josh Calloway signing off. We'll see you next time right back here, as always, on Sooners Illustrated.